Are you ready to explore a new way of looking at yourself and your life? To move past transition into transformation? I'm Pamela Hale, and Through a Different Lens Coaching is for people who want to make a difference. We provide powerful, practical tools for accelerated progress. Become the pilot of your own life and spread your wings, soar, and thrive. Visit throughadifferentlens.com or call 520-825-5463. Through a Different Lens. See a new path of possibility. 520-825-5463.
Well, as always, to have an in-studio partner with me eye-to-eye so we can smile and wink and flag each other at the same time. Welcome to the show, Pamela Hale from Through a Different Lens. How are you today?
Just great. I'm so glad to be here with you.
As always. And her book, by the way, folks, is Flying Lessons, How to Be the Pilot of Your Own Life. And in fact, Pamela, she's founder of Through a Different Lens. It's a practice dedicated to creating powerful, practical tools and experiences that bring vision, creativity, and wisdom to help us along the way. And this book of hers really is a metaphor, a series of metaphors, taking from her own story of pursuing a private pilot's license at the age of, she shared with me, I used to say in her 50s, and she reminded me, no, I was 57. When you began taking pilot lessons. So the story behind that.
Oh, yes. Well, I finally got the grail at age 59 for what that was worth. But one of the stories behind that is that in order to fly solo, you have to have a medical, of course. That's the medical part of your license. And so when I went to the doctor who was going to give me this medical, who's very experienced at assessing people, he was looking at my file and all I could see was his back and his head shaking in a no motion. And I finally said, is there a problem? And he turned around and said, it's just that you're starting all this now?
And then the response would be, and why not? That's exactly right. Well, good for you. And I think the result of your experience, lifelong quest, or burning desire to get your pilot's license now has opened up so many doors, whether it be your photography, that's certainly one of the things that jump off the pages in this wonderful book, as well as now the introduction, you're deciding to become an author and so on and so forth. It's like a ripple effect, isn't there?
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's great. Well, last month we covered the first lesson, which was Know Where You're Going to Land, which is a great one. And then today, of course, you'd like to talk about lesson two, which is Bring Enough Fuel for the Journey.
Absolutely.
So I had this vision of when I had young kids and we were getting on the airplane is how many little baggies of Cheerios and Chewies and whatever you could put in there to make sure you could land that whole flight through. But the metaphor is similar, really.
It is similar. It is similar. But in our adult lives, particularly our business lives, I think it's interesting to think that in aviation, of course, bring enough fuel for the journey is a no-brainer. I mean, if I were going to take you flying, and you had an idea that for some reason you had the thought that I hadn't really checked the fuel level, I don't think you'd be too interested in trusting me as a leader or a pilot.
Right.
But in our organizational life or our daily lives, we trust all kinds of leaders who are running on fumes. And in fact, it's not only okay, it's kind of honored in some circles to be running on fumes and be exhausted all the time.
Oh, it is. And in fact, that our calendars would show from morning to evening booked with gray, meaning time reserved, and sometimes double gray, meaning we're double tasked, which we know we can't do. And yet we think that's some kind of a badge.
Yes, that's right. So one of the many, many lessons I learned happened about this happened on the ground while I was preparing to fly, when Cleo, my flight instructor, said, today we're going to establish a personal minimum for you about how many gallons of fuel you need in order to fly, because you will be the pilot in command and it will be your responsibility to make sure we have enough fuel. So that would involve, first of all, checking the fuel, which was my first challenge, because to do that, I had to hoist myself up on the strut of her little 152, and my thigh muscles just didn't seem up to the task. I decided that I had to redouble my efforts in yoga so that I could do this without her boosting me up.
Right.
The whole thing was rather humiliating. But up on top of the strut, I could reach the fuel cap on top of the wing, unscrew that, and stick in a little dipstick, which is like a paint
You bet.
Stirrer, right. A wooden paint stirrer with numbers on it, and see how far up the moisture came. And so what we then talked about was that the FAA rule is that one must have enough fuel for whatever journey you're planning, plus a half hour extra in the day and an hour extra at night. And so she said, if we're going to be up in the air for an hour, how much extra fuel do you want? And I said, well, I guess a half an hour. And she said, so when you're flying alone, what would happen if you got lost? I said, okay, an hour extra. So now I knew that was my personal minimum. So that happened to be, in her airplane, 10 gallons in each tank. So each time I would check the fuel, of course, I would just be hoping that I would see not 9 3/4.
Right.
Because if I saw 9 3/4, I would want to cheat, because I'd want to avoid the pain in the neck task
of
pulling the plane over by the fuel tank, dragging this long hose out, getting a ladder and pulling the hose up, spilling gas on myself, this whole thing that I had to do. And so I wanted to cheat. So Cleo taught me that this is a life or death line that must be held. And so I was reading about the samurai, and I found that it was like, I said, it's sort of like a bushido that samurai warriors had, which was a vow to the self.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my teaching about this principle, I've said to people, so what if you had a bushido about your personal minimum? And one of the retreat participants, who I think of as being a really accomplished pilot of life, kind mm-hmm. of a, mm-hmm. an organized, sensible, and also intuitive woman, said, but if I did that, I'd have to change my life.
Yeah, that's kind of what we're here for, right?
In fact, she said, this is actually revolutionary. This would be radical. So, so we might think about the fact that in aviation, you know, just to hammer home the point,
mm-hmm.
if when a pilot dies in a crash that happens because they run out of fuel, and people feel sorry, of course everyone feels sorry, but frankly, pilots kind of raise their eyebrows and look behind their hands, and behind their hands say to each other, idiot.
Yeah.
Because it's a totally preventable accident.
Right. And so, boy, I'm sitting here starting, I'm hearing the voices in my head starting to jump up and say, see, why didn't you eat breakfast this morning? No wonder you're feeling woozy around 10 o'clock and you're about to grab for the granola bar or the M&Ms or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, yeah, you only had 4 hours of sleep. So what do you, so I can see the other physical drains on us, but I'm guessing that you are also going to take us in the thread of fuel, meaning your emotional stability and your spiritual stability and so on.
Exactly,
too.
All of it. So maybe the easiest way to jump into that is to just have the listeners picture that you have a dipstick in your hand, and there's one in my book, and I have bookmarks that come with the book. If you buy it from me, I send you a bookmark that has a dipstick on it. But you can just picture a little paint stirring stick with numbers. Let's just picture that on the bottom is a zero. God forbid you should ever reach that one, but that's a zero, up to 10. And so ask yourself, what number are you right now? And when you're thinking of a number that may just pop into your head, think of, as you said, physical energy, mental energy, and spiritual energy. Just maybe how much life force is in you for whatever little flights you have planned this weekend. And so think of that number. Would you be willing to share your number?
Yeah, I had a really rough last couple of days. So I'm probably about at a 5.
Okay.
And so, you know, I walked in here to the radio show this morning saying, okay, couple things, I'm going to fool myself that I have a 10 because I can turn it, maybe crank it up, but that's not always a sustainable condition.
Uh-huh.
But I know after the radio show, I've got to go and get some rest.
Yes, good.
So I know there's that recovery.
So that's coming. So you're aware of it.
I'm aware of it. This all mm-hmm. presupposes, of course, that the puppy doesn't want to play when I get home.
Yes. So the next step is to do what you've done and mm-hmm. say whatever number came into your mind, if you're listening to this, is this a good number for
you? Right. Is this sufficient?
Is, would this be a good personal minimum? So for you, it sounds like five would not.
Oh, no, not at all, because I'm this hummingbird of activity.
Uh-huh.
And I know
that
can't do
that. Number would you like to always have if you were planning on some flights? What would be a good minimum?
For me, it'd probably be about an eight, because I know there statistically, and one of our guests here on the show is going to talk about analytics, that I know I'll be able to pour more fuel from one side of that spare tank to the real tank, but then I have to figure out how to fill that other tank up that I might have depleted.
Right. Okay, so eight. And actually, so you're a lot more realistic than I did, because I started with three being my personal minimum, and I'll talk about that more later. But and people may come up with different numbers. But when I started this work, I was a cancer survivor, and so this is also one of the ways I had to work these lessons, and obviously fuel was one of the key lessons when you're combating exhaustion from cancer treatment and that kind
of thing. I think as well, for those of you who have gone through such a radical challenge, you also have a lot more resilience, knowing that maybe you were at a three, but you're force of will, your spirit, those around you that are supporting you, that you will pass from three higher up again.
And then there's another issue, which I learned when I was going to a homeopath during my treatment, and I told her about this dipstick. And she said, may I respectfully suggest that I think you suffer from dipstick distortion? And I said, excuse me, what do you mean by that? And she said, well, you're a high achiever.
Right.
So, your three
is somebody else's
one.
Right.
So I respectfully suggest that you raise the number to five. And I, like Deborah, who was my retreat participant, said, but I'd have to change my life.
Or the other side of us, those of us that are engineers, would say, well, I can simply fix this. I'll just change the size of the tank.
Yes.
And then the dipstick will tell me something different. So,
Yes. So you pick a personal minimum, and then just as you're doing, maybe if somebody is suffering from dipstick distortion the way I did, you might have to add that margin to compensate for that. So mine is now five. And so then the question becomes, a couple of questions about, one, how do you refuel?
How do you refuel?
And what is your premium fuel? Because if I go out and put jet fuel in our little Cessna 182, we're going to crash on takeoff. That's a premium fuel for a different airplane. So all our vehicles, all our body, mind, spirit units, vehicles, have different needs for different types of fuel. So, for example, it's great to know whether you're really an introvert or an extrovert. Because I know that even though I love being on the show, love being with people, I refuel by myself best. And so I know that now, but it's taken some years to discover that. So refueling for me includes solitude. I just held a wonderful group. I'm doing a group in my home on the flying lessons, sort of in sync with
in
these
sync,
shows.
Yes, exactly.
And so we just finished number one, and so we did kind of a poll in the group. And nature came in very high on people's list. So we're fortunate here in Arizona that we can get out in nature. Actually, we can't get out in the summer as easily as in the winter, but at least in the winter coming, we can refuel in nature. Some people will say friends, spouse, work, money, all those things. But we need to look at how we could choose a premium fuel that no one could ever take from us.
That, and also bringing enough fuel for the journey. Of course, you as pilots know that the more fuel you bring, then the heavier the plane's going to weigh. And you know, the less apt you are perhaps to have the equipment be lithe if you had to do some other maneuvers and the like. So there's always that careful balance of, can you get too much fuel?
Uh-huh.
Absolutely you can.
That's right. We can be overstuffed. We know that.
With Thanksgiving on the horizon, I got your point already, yes.
Yes, or even overwhelmed with, you know, I just got back from a visit with family, and it was delicious. And fueling in so many ways, but my cup was kind of running over.
Can be overstimulated.
And the overstimulation, it took me a day to kind of regroup. So so deciding on what your premium fuels are, because there's probably more than one, But I think the important thing is to really look at what would be the one that no one could take from you. What would be the inner fuel that isn't dependent on outer circumstances? Because we know that friendships can change, relationships can change, jobs can go away, bank accounts can disappear. Our wonderful home that's a sanctuary can somehow not be available to us anymore. We've learned lately about how destructible those things are. And so more than ever, it's time to look inside and say, what is the eternal, internal, non-destructible fuel that is really our birthright as human beings that no one can take from us?
And I like that, that no one can take from us. However, we also know that our own voices from our own past experiences might push some of that out of the way, right?
So of course they do, absolutely. And so what I do to sort of remind myself of how to get back to where I can place that importance is I think about Viktor Frankl, who was a survivor of the concentration camps, even though his whole family was exterminated. And the way he credited his survival was to say that he decided he was going to find meaning in every day. So I figure if he could do that in those circumstances, I certainly ought to be able to do it in my privileged, relatively privileged life.
That's right. For those of you who just tuned in, we're speaking with Pamela Hale, and her business is Through a Different Lens, and it's lens.com for those of you who are interested further. And her book is called Flying Lessons, How to Become the Pilot of Your Own Life. And we're into lesson two about bringing enough fuel for the journey. So what kind of tools do you think are the most relevant or could helpful to help anchor people?
Yeah, good question. So just to follow the flight metaphor, you could follow a pre-flight checklist.
Oh, that's a good one.
That is, if something big is coming up for you, you know, you might think about how is your airworthiness. And you might think about the weather out there. What are you likely to encounter? What kind of traffic might you encounter? What would be alternative airports? Where are you going to land in case the engine fails? And how long is the flight?
Mm-hmm.
All of these things are things that we have to plan when we fly an airplane, and yet we don't pause sometimes and think about them in our daily life. We do on bigger journeys, but not always in our daily life. So another tool is to work with the dipstick and establish your personal minimum and adjusted personal minimum.
That's right.
And define your premium fuel, and then see if you're able to establish a Bushido. And the thing that I see that gets in the way of establishing a Bushido, like, is, do I dare put myself first?
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay to put myself first? So a quick story about that. It came from a man that I met in Baja when my husband and I were flying our plane down there, and we landed at a place, a little airstrip, owned by a guy who is known in Baja as Way Cool Bob.
Oh, I like that.
He was
cool
a 60s guy who kept saying Way Cool everything. And Way Cool had moved to Baja because he was a cancer survivor, and he decided that this was the lifestyle he wanted. And so after he let us park our plane there, and he loaned us a car and so forth, we took him out to dinner to thank him. And over dinner, he looked at me, and we talked about both being cancer survivors, and he said, "You don't put yourself first, I can tell." And I thought, how dare you? You don't even know me. And I said, "What makes you think that?" And he said, I can just tell. And I said, "Well, what about you? You loaned us the car, and, you know, you gave to us." And he said, "I'm not talking about giving. I'm doing that giving because it pleases me, and that's my motivation." And so I took that story from Way Cool and digested and worked with it in me and decided that he had something there and needed to think about that. And as fate would have it, about a month later, Way Cool Bob was killed in this freak accident on a tarmac. And so I figured that he served as kind of an angel for me.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
So I like to pass on his story.
Yes, that's a beautiful one. But, you know, again, another flying metaphor is this idea of taking care of yourself first is absolutely the first safety check we hear from the flight attendants is in the event of a crisis and the masks come down, put yours on first before you attend to a child or those
who
are not
go.
Capable.
There you go.
And our, by the way, our natural instinct, certainly for me as a mother, wouldn't be to do that. I'd immediately be going for my child.
Uh-huh.
But how can I serve my child or others around around me if I'm not taking care of myself first.
So that leads us to probably the last tool on the list, or part of the process, which is to face the core fear associated with this lesson, which is the fear of being powerless.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Now you're going to tell me I can't be in control.
Well, I think what it means is that the flip side of responsibility, because the lesson involves taking 100% responsibility for our fuel, and that's the responsibility, but as responsibility always does, it has a nice flip side, and that is that it allows us to step into our power. So Cleo kept pointing that out, that when, as you are pilot in command and you take full responsibility for the airworthiness of the airplane, it doesn't mean that you have to be a mechanic. It doesn't mean that just because you don't want to know what a shimmy damper is, that you can't check the airplane to make sure the shimmy damper is in place. And if it isn't, that you can't call someone. So taking that responsibility for being pilot in command is really akin to a leadership situation, where when we take that responsibility, we assume our power. And so that leads us to the challenge of redefining or examining our relationship to power. Is our power, are we fueling ourselves with a kind of power that's all about adrenaline and ambition?
Mm-hmm.
Or are we fueling ourselves with the kind of power that has to do with wanting to serve?
Which is, of course, a profoundly different way to approach for our leaders who are listening. That place that you have in service and support of those who work for you, as opposed to those who are doing things you tell them to do.
Right, right. And so one might think of, even though this is sort of a false comparison in some ways, but that the power-driven ambition and adrenaline could be called a masculine approach to power, and the more feminine power of being in service could be the feminine half.
Which, as always, for all of us in our lives, we have to find the right balance between the two of those. The idea, too, of allowing healing in that process of relationships and walking away from the fear that's behind it is important.
Absolutely. Fear is not our friend when we're on any kind of healing journey. And so I think of the story of a client of mine, I'll call Lisa, who came to me after her third bout of colon cancer. And her life force, her dipstick number would have been very, very low. And so we had to examine how she was fueling herself. And, of course, what was happening is that fear was up for her, which was totally understandable.
Sure, exactly.
But so we had to work on making friends with death. This relates to Bruce's segment that came
before
us. And to put that aside in a way so that she could fuel herself with the joy and the love and the life force that that a life-threatening disease actually makes very palpable for people.
Yeah, and fear comes up. I mean, you hear stories of people that actually have a greater fear of giving a public presentation or speech, you know, or fear of going to the dentist more than they do of dealing with death. So it isn't just the obvious ones, is that the fear can come in all sorts of forms and shapes and forms. The thing that really caught my attention, though, about bringing enough fuel for the journey is this idea of different types of fuel. And that quite often just taking a time before you go into a situation that could be difficult can create the opportunity for the situation not to be difficult.
Right, exactly.
Right? Depending on how you walk in, whether you call it in command of your own power, your own thoughts, or just having taken time to read a novel or listen to some music or just be kind of calmed to try to put everything else in bigger perspective. That
exactly.
This situation you're walking into is not as crisis-oriented. The flip side, though, of course, and what I think your co-pilot and your trainer were there was guiding you through is, there's going to be times when you suddenly find yourself, you're out of fuel. There was a leak you weren't even realize you had. And so how resilient we can be and strong through guiding through those situations on the flip side.
Well, we are very resilient, and that's the difference between our beings and airplanes. The airplane is unforgiving if it runs out of fuel, and we do have resilience within us. But the more we know about ourselves and what we really need, the faster that resilience can take place.
Very well, good. Beautifully put. Again, we've been speaking with Pamela Hale, and her website is throughadifferentlens.com. And the book, again, is Flying Lessons, Become the Pilot of Your Own Life. This was Lesson 2, so give us a precursor. What's Lesson 3 going to be about?
Lesson 3 is Take the Pilot's Seat.
All right. I like that one. Mm-hmm. I don't make a good passenger. So I'll look forward to the lessons. I'm sure it'll come back. Again, Pamela, thank you so much for contributing.
Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.